Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's November the 17th, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Mayer from the Grain Elevator there in Lexington. In agricultural news, Washington holds off on a bill to increase the price of goods imported from China. And the GAO has issued a preliminary report on the expired mandatory livestock reporting law. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau, and we'll catch up with U of I's latest offerings on the web, dairy management courses that are available around the globe. Just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at a very chilly forecast for the Midwest. Get your cup of hot coffee and settle back for this edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat 304 and three quarters. They were off a quarter today. The March contract at 321, down a penny and a quarter, or rather down a penny and a half. December futures in the corn pit, $1.92 and a quarter. They were off a half of the day with a low price of 191 and three quarters. March corn 206 and a half, down a quarter. The May contract at 215, down a half. And December futures 241 and a quarter, unchanged. January soybeans $5.79 and a quarter, two and a half higher. March futures down, or rather up to, at 586 and three quarters. And the May contract in the bean pit at $5.92, up a quarter for the day. November soybeans next year, 603, they were off a half. December bean meal, 174.80, they were up 140 for the day. And December bean oil at 22.16, down 3. November feeder cattle from the Mercantile Exchange, 116.52 and a half, up a nickel. December live cattle, 47 and a half cents lower at 91.22 and a half. And December lean hogs at $62.10, they were down a dollar for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Todd.
It looks like a rough week in the corn pit, at least at this point. An outside down week is scheduled to be in. Of course, it could turn around very quickly tomorrow.
Well, it could. I don't necessarily know what the reasons would be, but, you know, anything can happen overnight. The market, though, you know, the big thing about the big problem the market has is basically the crops that we grew. We just got, you know, when USDA went ahead and solidified 11 billion bushel corn crop and a 3 billion bushel bean crop here last week, that pretty well took a lot of steam out of the market, or as far as any kind of recovery type steam going into Thanksgiving and into the first part of the year, and that's kind of where we're at. We just got a lot of inventory around. We got a lot of corn piles to move. Basis, though, has improved, but a lot of it has come from a lack of farmer selling more so than any kind of pickup in demand.
As we take a look at some of the cash side of this, there are an awful lot of corn. There's an awful lot of corn around, as you said. There are a lot of cars being filled, train cars at this point, being filled from piles that are on the ground. Are the futures market simply reacting to that, or is there something else afoot?
Well, we're kind of in the same. I mean, I don't know if there's anything afoot. I mean, it's just that there's no reason for the end users to come in here and book a bunch of inventory. Number one, there's just a lot of inventory, so the futures market continues to drift in here. We're down here in contract lows. Whereas the cash market, though, has bounced nicely off of, in corn's case, off of an October 18th low. We've bounced, you know, 10 to 13 cents, 15 cents off the low. Now we've set back some. Beans, you know, bounced off their October 10th low significantly. Now it's given back some. So when you look at the futures chart, you've got one market. And you look at the cash market, and you've got a little different situation. So, and I think what's happening here is that we had such wide basis levels back earlier this fall due to Katrina and the big rollout of carryover stocks, and then the result of a much bigger crop than what we thought, basis levels, the first thing they had to improve was basis levels. Now they have improved. Now if the market's going to improve from this point forward, now we're going to have to see maybe a turnaround in the futures market.
It makes for an interesting and I suppose a bit of a confusing marketplace. There is so much grain on the ground, but the basis levels have managed to come back in it. And with Katrina and the transportation, it seems that was in not very good shape, yet the crop has been put away and the futures markets are drifting lower. And I guess, do you have a good understanding of why the divergence in the cash in the futures market at this point?
Well, the divergence was is they got terribly wide back in, and what, and that was, you know, because of the nobody wanted to buy any cash. So, you know, the cash market kind of disappeared for a minute or two there during August. Didn't know whether what kind of scheduling we were in. So the basis widened significantly. Nobody wanted to buy anything. Nobody wanted to sell anything. So you had that big wide basis level. Then now this, as we got New Orleans back on track and the demand picture a little bit back on track, then that has kind of put a little more narrowing here in the basis, and then of course farmer movement has come to a standstill after harvest. So that is what is bringing, tucking it in. It's not necessarily there's any kind of distortion. It just got extremely wide back there in late August, early September, and now it's coming back to something more normalized as the steady movement of grain that moves into market channels is more normalized compared to what it was late last summer when we had the funneling effect of lone corn and lone beans coming out from underneath storage going to the marketplace prior to harvest, and then when you had Katrina on top of that. So you just had a big funneling of cash inventories moving into market channels. That took the basis extremely wide, and now we've had some time to work off those inventories, and the basis is narrowed in.
Anything that you were capable of learning last year about the way the market worked through the winter months, not through the summertime when you were talking about this funneling, but through the winter months as we had just a huge supply on hand and how that came into the marketplace and that you might be applying to your analysis as we go through this winter?
Well, my guess it's going to be real difficult to excite this market over the next few months because of the big crops that we raised, and we're looking at much larger carryovers this year than what we were a year ago. You know, just about anybody starts talking about dry weather, reduced yield prospects because of dry weather is going to get probably laughed out of the coffee shop, at least over the next 2-3 months anyway. And most balance sheets are going to start using, they're going to use 150 or 155 bushel yield probably on this corn. So even acreage reductions in corn is going to make the crop look pretty big as we look down the road. We're going to see, I think a huge jump in bean acres if things play out here over the next 2-3 months. So when you look ahead to next year's supply potentials, if you use average type weather, we've got a lot of inventory coming down the pike, and so it's going to be real difficult to get the market excited. Now, I also know once you get into the spring, things change a lot. And then all of the uncertainties of a new growing season can begin to come into play as people worry about this and worry about that. We don't know what kind of weather pattern we're going to have. Chances are, you know, it's going to throw everybody a few curveballs. But at least over the next 2-3 months, it looks to me like it's going to be real difficult to beat carry. And I think that's been the strategy all along on corn. Especially corn is, you know, you collect your LDP, you sell the distant months, you add the two prices together, and you go on with it and get ready for the next year. And I think this is what we're going to find out. The people that collected the LDP and now waiting for a rally to materialize, they got the initial push in here, but I doubt very much if they're going to be able to beat carry at least over the next couple months anyway.
And then as you look forward and talk about next year, have you got an idea? If you're an Illinois farmer, average grain farmer at this point, and I know things can change, which crop would you be more inclined to plant? Would you change your rotation, I guess, is the question.
Well, no, I don't really see any need to change rotations. I mean, when we're talking about the better soils here in the northern Corn Belt, I mean, you pretty well have to. You've got your equipment geared toward it. I suppose you have to look at you know, your product input costs. I mean, that this is what's going to squeeze corn acres in a little bit. Is that the input cost is significant, and that may push some acres out of production and maybe in the soybeans because there's less input costs there. But that would be the only thing that I would see is that there is going to be a drift, I think, a tendency to go to more bean acres.
We appreciate you being with us this afternoon.
Very well.
And Dan Swickers with AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, joining for us from his office this afternoon on a Thursday. At the bottom of the hour, agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Ed Kieser forecast for tonight across the two-state region, partly cloudy skies. Lows will range, he says, from 13 in northeastern Indiana to 23 in southwestern Illinois. And tomorrow, Ed says, a mix of clouds, some sunshine. Highs will range from 38 in northeastern Indiana to 48 in southwestern Illinois. Bundle up. Now today's agricultural news. Sponsors of a bill intended to punish Chinese imports say they will hold off on a vote of their proposal until next month. Senators Lindsey Graham from South Carolina and Charles Schumer of New York say with the president, scheduled to meet tomorrow in Korea with Chinese leaders at the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation meeting, it's inappropriate to take a vote. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist has promised Graham and Schumer that he will schedule a vote on the measure before the end of this session of Congress. The bill would assess a 27.5% tariff on all Chinese imports, an amount that Graham and Schumer say would compensate the U.S. for China's monetary policy under which its currency is greatly undervalued. The Government Accountability Office has issued a preliminary report to Congress on the mandatory livestock reporting law that expired September the 30th. Iowa Republican Senator Charles Grassley has comment.
The report is only preliminary, so I can't comment on the report. But we are beginning to work with the Senate and House Agriculture Committees on language that could help address the concerns that will come out in the final report that's due out in December. And then as a result, move along to the rewriting the mandatory price reporting provisions.
The final report is scheduled for release in December. Grassley says he also wants to include recommendations from a wide range of producer groups in the rewritten mandatory livestock price reporting law.
I want you to know that I've received recommendations from the Iowa Pork Producers, the Livestock Marketing Association, National Farmers Union, National Farmers Organization, Nebraska Farmers Union, Producers Livestock Marketing Association, RCAF USA, and all of these have given me their views on some possible initiatives that they'd like to see implemented as we rewrite this legislation.
The Reporting Act requires packers, processors, and importers to provide price, contracting, and supply and demand information to USDA. Well, USDA yesterday announced it would complete a new federal rule by May that will end the remaining U.S. bans on Canadian beef imports. Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service head Ron DeHaven.
We are in the midst now of a rulemaking process that would consider allowing animals over 30 months of age into the United States from a minimum risk country or zone, which, of course, we've already categorized Canada as a minimum risk region or country. We feel that the science is there in that, given the level of surveillance that has been done in Canada, which is comparable to the level of surveillance that we are doing with our enhanced surveillance program, given the feed ban that is in place now, and we know it's been very effective at least since 2001, And given the safeguards that we have in place in both countries to include removal of specified risk material, that the science does support it.
Well, U.S. grain officials say they're disappointed in a Canadian ruling that U.S. corn hurts Canadian domestic markets, but they're taking a wait-and-see attitude. On the other hand, Ontario Corn Producers Association President Doug Eady says a final ruling in favor of Canada could help level the playing field with their American counterparts.
Well, knowing that that if we have a proper safety net program in place, like our risk management program, funded by both levels of government, that we would have no need for this our trade action. But until we reach that point, then we'll stay the course.
The Canadian International Trade Tribunal could place duty penalties on U.S. corn for up to 5 years. Penalties could come as early as December. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. Up next, our weekly commentary segment in today's Listener Opinion Forum. Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says the high price of natural gas is hitting farmers hard.
Due to the soaring energy costs and higher farm input prices associated with natural gas, America's farmers are up against a formidable challenge of trying to provide for their own families' needs while also producing affordable food and fiber. Illinois Farm Bureau President Philip Nelson told Congress that last week. Nelson called the combination of significantly higher energy and fertilizer costs coupled with falling grain prices a perfect storm, spelling serious trouble for rural America. He said Congress must act to address our nation's energy needs, especially the challenge farmers face with higher natural gas prices. Nelson explained to Congress that natural gas is critically important to agriculture because it is used both directly and indirectly in nearly every aspect of farm operation. He testified about the impact of higher natural gas prices during a House Appropriations Subcommittee hearing. Nelson said farmers are paying higher expenses for electricity, fertilizers, farm chemicals, heating barns and poultry houses, and drying grain due to the rising cost of natural gas. He said nitrogen fertilizer is priced at more than $500 per ton this fall in central Illinois, as compared to $200 per ton in 2002. However, the price of corn has not gone up accordingly. Corn prices are the same now as they were a year ago. Nelson called the passage of the recent comprehensive energy bill a first step for solving our nation's energy woes. He said, however, more has to be done to encourage domestic exploration and recovery of oil and natural gas. Electrical generation has to be accomplished without the extensive use of natural gas and can be accomplished with the investment in the technology for safe, clean use of our country's huge coal reserves. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850. Well, the University of Illinois is reaching out to students interested in dairy science. We'll hear how the land-grant institution is using the web to offer coursework around the globe. You can go to school at the University of Illinois and never leave your home, be that in Chicago or Africa. Dairy specialist Mike Hutchins has pioneered online coursework for the U of I's College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences.
We have developed a dairy certificate program, and this is one of the first online classes here in the United States, which means students that can get to the internet can take our class from any place in the world. And in fact, we've had people from all over the world taking these classes. These classes are all recorded on a CD-ROM. So the student goes to class whenever she or he has time. So each week they are given about an hour and a half of actual condensed lecture material that they will listen to. Then they have a homework assignment they complete, and then one day a week we go live on the internet where we maintain a classroom environment. I will call that synchronous learning. And they can then respond and ask questions. We present new material and finish up that area of the work.
The online classwork is referred to as asynchronous. That means the teachers and the students are all working online at the same time. And there is interaction among the group. The University of Illinois Dairy Science Certificate Program consists of six different classes.
This certificate is actually awarded by the University of Illinois. It is certified by the graduate school. And there are several programs in engineering and library sciences, to mention a few, that have these same certificate programs that a student can earn. It is not a master's program or a PhD program, but a certificate of completion, which can then be used in their career development or pay enhancement or perhaps looking for new jobs.
The online classwork from the University of Illinois does not come cheap, but that's par for the course when attending a world-class institution.
The other aspect that this is part of the university, so you will actually get a grade in the class in a transcript. Therefore, the cost is modestly high. It's about $300 per credit hour because it is part of the university. The good news for those students who do not want the actual degree or classwork towards a master's, they could take it as an audit, which reduces the price about in half. So there is some flexibility, but it's not a very inexpensive program to deliver, and these programs will run for about 10 or 11 weeks.
The classes generally follow the normal University of Illinois semester system. To learn more about the U of I Illinois Dairy Certificate, just type Dairy Certificate and UIUC, which stands for University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, into the Google search engine. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and in the cash market is Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois, at the elevator there. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Todd. How are you?
I want to talk a little bit more about this corn market and the idea that there will be probably many producers that have gone ahead and taken the LDP. That would be on the advice of almost all of the analysts here on WILL. Managed, I would think, to get anywhere between 44 and 48 cents a bushel. Now they're setting unpriced, which is not at the advice of most of our analysts, and wondering what they should do when they're faced with an outside down week in the futures market.
Well, I think that there's really, Todd, several, or let's say three basic ways a producer could go here. One is that you could look at just simply going out and, as far as getting corn priced, look at your best delivery slot, and best being the one that pays you the most for the amount of money it costs you to get there. So let's say a March or a May or a June delivery, and just look at the bases and see if the bases is close to where it would normally be for that time of the year. And if so, which it is in some locations, just go ahead and sell those futures out there and take full advantage of the carry in the market. That's the simplest way. If you want to continue to have ownership, then you could come in and buy call options, for example, to cover yourself, you know, in case the futures market does rally, in case of weather problems or something. But you have to remember that if you do that, you're buying that carry in the market. In other words, you're going out there and buying, for example, July futures are trading 30 cents, 35 cents higher than the nearby futures, so you're paying a premium by buying that call option out there in, say, a July future slot.
And the cash basis in your area holding strong?
Yeah, actually, the corn has continued to improve a little bit, although the pace has slowed up. On soybeans, really not much activity on the basis, so the of course, the soybean cash price has moved all over the place because the futures have.
Mm-hmm. And then your bids for the day?
Our bids tonight are 174 on the corn and 554 on soybeans.
We appreciate you being with us, Bill.
Thanks, Todd.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us from the elevator there on Thursday afternoons. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with Peter Levitt.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Peter Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Peter.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It was awfully cold last night here in the Midwest. Can we expect more of the same this evening?
Yeah, it's going to be cold this evening, but I think we're going to see some clouds moving in around the midnight or late this evening, and that'll take the that'll kill the fall in the temperatures, and actually temperatures may rise a bit towards morning. It should get down, though, into the mid to low teens in places by midnight, and then it'll level off and come up a little bit toward morning. And then we go into one of these roller coaster weeks where we have temperatures rising a little bit on Friday night. Cold front goes by. They're down again on Saturday. Up again late Sunday into Monday as another front approaches and some milder air gets in ahead of it. That goes by. It gets colder Tuesday and Wednesday and stays pretty chilly through the end of the week. All in all, temperatures will average below normal, but I don't think we'll see temperatures as cold as they were either this morning or will be early tonight.
Are you hearing concerns at all about any of the winter crops?
Yes, we are, actually, but it's not here in the Midwest. It's out in the southern plains in the winter wheat crop.
Sure.
That crop got off to a ragged start. They did have some good moisture to work with in much of the hard winter wheat belt, central and eastern portions, say, for example, of Kansas, and then Oklahoma. But it's been very dry in Texas, especially the panhandle of Texas right up through Oklahoma. It's been chronically dry in eastern Colorado, western Kansas, southwestern Nebraska. And a lot of the crop didn't really get established. They're only at about the three-leaf stage as we go into the cold weather. Should be up around five leaves to be stable resistant to winter wind and cold. So I think we've got a problem out there in the hard winter wheat belt. Soft red areas look okay. Moisture, of course, is much better in eastern areas. Still dry through northern portions of Illinois and southern Iowa.
And then round us out with 25 seconds on your assessment of the South American start to the soybean growing season.
Yeah, they soybeans, they were a little dry early, then got wet. They've had now pretty good moisture in southern and central areas of Brazil. So I don't think there's a problem there, and I think the moisture is getting up into the Mato Grosso area where it'll be okay up there too. Where it's really been dry is down in the Argentine. There are some beans down there and some corn and the wheat's coming off. That's where the problem is, I think. The Argentine and maybe up into Paraguay, but as far as Brazil is concerned, I'd say it looks okay.
Peter, we'll talk with you again next Thursday.
Okay.
Oh, I take that back. No, we won't. It's Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. We'll look forward to that.
It'll be 2 weeks then. Thanks, Peter.
All right.
Bye-bye. Peter Levitt joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. And that is this edition of the CMR. Be sure to join us again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the agricultural markets on the pre-opening commodity market report with your host, David Dickey, who is the Director of Agricultural Programming here at the radio stations. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good afternoon.